You are listening to RudolfSteinerAudio.com. This is a reading of the Bamford translation, the newest one, of How to Know Higher Worlds, A Modern Path of Initiation by Rudolf Steiner. This is Chapter 5, entitled Requirements for Esoteric Training. Paragraph 1. The requirements or conditions for entering into esoteric training were not arbitrarily devised by any human being. They arise, naturally, out of the nature of esoteric knowledge itself. Just as we cannot become painters if we are unwilling to handle a paintbrush, so we cannot receive esoteric training if we refuse to meet the conditions an esoteric teacher considers necessary. Strictly speaking, such teachers can give us only guidance. Whatever they say should be taken in this spirit. They have passed through the stages that prepare one for cognition of the higher worlds. They know, from experience, what is needed. But it depends entirely upon our own free will whether or not we choose to walk the same path as they followed. Were we to ask an esoteric teacher to allow us to enter esoteric training, but were unwilling to meet the conditions, it would be like saying to a painting teacher, quote, "Teach me to paint, but please excuse me from having to touch a brush." Close quote. A spiritual teacher has nothing to offer a student who does not, of his or her own free will, first come to meet the teacher. Yet it is not enough simply to have a vague wish for higher knowledge. Many people have this wish. But this wish alone, without the willingness to meet the specific requirements of esoteric training, achieves nothing. All those who complain that following the path is not easy should remember this. If we cannot or do not want to meet such demanding conditions, we should simply give up the training for the time being. Certainly, these conditions are strict, yet they are not harsh, and carrying them out not only should be, but must be, a free deed. Paragraph 2. Without this fact of our own free choice, the requirements imposed by a spiritual teacher might easily seem coercive to our soul or conscience. Esoteric training has to do with the education of our inner life, and the spiritual teacher counsels us to this end. Nothing that flows from our own free decision can be called coercion. Were we to ask a teacher, quote, "Tell me your secrets, but leave my ordinary habitual perceptions, feelings, and ideas untouched," close quote, we would be asking the impossible. With this attitude, we would be seeking to satisfy only our curiosity, our desire for information, and we would never attain esoteric wisdom. Paragraph 3. What follows is a description of the series of conditions to be met by the student. It should be noted that none of these requires complete perfection. We need only strive toward that goal. No one can fulfill these conditions completely, but everyone can set out on the path to their fulfillment. It is our attitude and our will to begin that are important. Paragraph 4. The first requirement is that we turn our attention to the improvement of our physical and mental or spiritual health. Our health does not in the first place depend on us. Yet we can make an effort to improve it. Sound understanding, healthy cognition, occurs only in a healthy human being. Esoteric schooling does not exclude unhealthy people, but demands that they have the will to lead a healthy life. Such health depends upon achieving the greatest possible independence and autonomy. As a rule, The good advice that others give us, whether we want it or not, is quite unnecessary. We should strive to take care of ourselves. With regard to physical health, warding off harmful influences is more important than anything else. To fulfill our obligations, we often have to do things that are not conducive to our health. Indeed, in certain cases, we must learn to place responsibility above health. Yet, there is much that we can give up, if only we have the goodwill to do so. Certainly, duty is often more important than health, and sometimes even than life itself. Gratification, however, should never be the first priority. For the student of the esoteric way, pleasure should be only a means to health and life. Here we must be completely honest and truthful with ourselves. It is no use leading an ascetic life if this arises out of the same motives of gratification as do other pleasures. Some people gain the same satisfaction from asceticism that others gain from tippling, and we cannot expect this kind of asceticism to be useful for higher knowledge. Many people blame everything that seems to hinder their spiritual progress on their outer circumstances. They claim that they cannot work on themselves in their present life situations. It may indeed be desirable to change our situation for other reasons, but we do not need to do so for our esoteric training. All we need to do for this is promote our bodily and mental health as much as we can, given our present circumstances. Whatever we do, even the smallest task, can benefit the whole of humanity. It is a much greater act of soul to be clear about how necessary every small and even menial task is to the whole than to think, quote, "This work is too low for me. I am called to something higher." Close quote. Therefore, it is especially important for a student to strive for complete mental and spiritual health. An unhealthy inner life impedes our access to higher knowledge. Clear, calm thinking and reliable sensations and feelings are essential. Nothing should be further from us than any tendency toward fantasy, excitability, nervousness, inflation, and fanaticism. We must acquire a sound eye for all that life presents to us, EYE. We must learn to cope confidently with life. We must learn to allow things to speak to us quietly, letting them work upon us. We must make every effort to meet life's demands wherever and whenever necessary. We should avoid all exaggeration and one-sidedness in our judgments and feelings. If we cannot meet these conditions, we will not experience the higher worlds, but only the world of our own imagination. Instead of following the truth, we will be guided by our own opinions. It is better to be, quote, "down to earth," close quote, than inflated and full of fantasies. Paragraph 5. The second requirement is that we feel ourselves to be a part of the whole of life. Much is involved in fulfilling this condition, but each can approach it in our own way. For instance, if I am a schoolteacher and a pupil does not live up to my wishes, I should direct my feeling not at the pupil, but first at myself. I should feel myself so at one with my pupil that I can ask, quote, "Is this pupil's shortcoming not perhaps my own fault?" Close quote. Instead of blaming the pupil, I should rather reflect upon how I might change my own behavior and so help the pupil meet my expectations in the future. This kind of attitude will gradually change our whole way of thinking about the greatest as well as the least of things. For example, I will look upon criminals differently. I will now withhold my judgment and contemplate our common humanity, thinking, quote, I am a human being just as this person is. Perhaps it was only my upbringing, which my situation in life has given me, that spared me this fate. Close quote. Then I will reflect that criminals, who are my brothers and sisters in humanity, might have turned out very differently had they received the attention and encouragement my mentors gave me. I will be led to reflect that I have received something that was withheld from them, that my good fortune comes at their expense. It is then but a small step to the insight that as a member or organ of humanity as a whole, I am jointly responsible with all human beings for everything that happens. This insight should not, of course, be immediately translated into political agitation in the world. It should be calmly cultivated in the soul. By this means, it will gradually come to expression in my outer actions. Indeed, in such matters, we can begin only by reforming ourselves. To make general demands for social and political reform on the basis of such insights is fruitless. It is easy to say how other people should be, but students of esoteric knowledge must work in the depths and not on the surface. It would therefore be quite wrong to connect the demands of esoteric schooling with any external demand for reform or even political change. The education of the spirit has nothing to do with such things. Political activists generally know what to ask of other people, but they hardly ever talk about asking anything of themselves. Paragraph 6. The third requirement of esoteric training is intimately connected to the second. It requires that we win through to the conviction that thoughts and feelings are as important for the world as actions. We should recognize that when we hate our fellow human beings, it is just as destructive as when we physically strike them. This brings us, once more, to the insight that anything we do for our own improvement benefits not just ourselves, but also the world. The world benefits as much from pure feelings and thoughts as from good deeds. Indeed, as long as we do not believe in the world's significance of our inner lives, we are not ready to take up esoteric training. And we only rightly believe in the meaning of our inner lives, our souls, when we care for our souls and perform our inner work as if it were at least as real as our outer work. We must know that what we feel has as much impact upon the world as the work done by our hands. Paragraph 7. With this, the fourth requirement is already stated. We must acquire the conviction that our true nature does not lie without, but within. We can achieve nothing spiritually if we regard ourselves merely as a product, a result of the physical world. The very basis of esoteric training is feeling that we are soul spiritual beings. Once we have made this feeling our own, we are ready to distinguish between our inner sense of duty and outer success. We learn to recognize that there is no necessary and immediate correlation between these. As esoteric students, we must find the middle ground between following the demands of the world and doing what we see as the right thing to do. We must not force upon others something that they cannot understand. But at the same time, we must be free of the urge to do only what those around us recognize and approve of. only the inner voice of the soul, as it honestly strives for higher knowledge, can confirm our truths. Yet, we must also learn as much as possible about our environment and find out what is useful and good for it. And if we do so, we will develop within ourselves what esoteric science calls, quote, the spiritual scales, close quote, or the balance, on one of whose trays lies a helpful heart, open to the needs of the world, and on the other, inner firmness and unshakable endurance. Paragraph 8. This brings us to the fifth requirement, steadfastness in following through on a resolution once it has been made. Nothing should lead us to abandon something we have decided upon except the insight that we have made a mistake. Each resolution we make is a force that works in its own way, even when it is not immediately successful in the area where it is first applied. Success is crucial only when we act out of longing. But any action motivated by craving is worthless from the point of view of the higher world. In the higher world, love is the only motivation for action. As esoteric students, all that stirs us to action must be subsumed in love. If we act out of love, we shall never tire of transforming our resolutions into deeds, no matter how often we may have failed in the past. As a result, we do not judge a deed on the basis of its outer effect on other people, but take satisfaction in the act itself of carrying out our actions. We must learn to offer up our deeds, our very essence, to the world, regardless of how our offering may be received. To be esoteric students, we must be prepared for this life of sacrifice and service. Paragraph 9. The sixth requirement is that we develop the feeling of gratitude for all that we receive. We should know that our very existence is a gift from the whole universe. How much is necessary for human beings to receive and sustain their existence? We owe so much to nature and to other people. Grateful thoughts such as these must become second nature for those engaged in esoteric training. If we do not give ourselves fully to such thoughts, we shall never develop the all-embracing love we need to attain higher knowledge. Only if I love something can it reveal itself to me. And every revelation should fill me with thankfulness, for I am made richer by it. Paragraph 10. All the above conditions come together in the seventh, always to understand life as these conditions demand. In so doing, we create the possibility of giving our lives the stamp of unity. All the different expressions of our life will then be in harmony and not contradict each other. And this will prepare us for the calm inner peace we must develop during the first steps in esoteric training. Paragraph 11. If we are sincerely and genuinely willing to meet these requirements, then we are in a position to commit ourselves to esoteric training. We are then ready to follow the advice given in this book. Some people may find many of these suggestions too outward, too related to external life. Perhaps they did not expect the course of esoteric training to unfold in such strict forms. But everything in our inner life must develop through something outward. Just as a painting that is still only in the painter's head cannot be said really to exist, so esoteric training cannot be said to exist if there is no outward expression of it. Once we know that the outer must express the inner, we can no longer hold the strict forms in low regard. It is true that the spirit is more important than the form, which indeed is nothing at all without the spirit. But the spirit would remain idle if it did not create a form for itself. Paragraph 12. These requirements are intended to make us strong enough to fulfill the further demands that spiritual training inevitably imposes. If we lack the proper foundation that meeting these conditions provides, we will face each new challenge with misgivings. We will not have the belief in people necessary for esoteric work. To believe in and love humanity is the basis of all striving for the truth. Our striving must be built upon trust and love for humanity, although it does not begin there. Rather, it must flow out of the soul's own forces, and this love for humanity must gradually expand into love for all beings, and indeed for all existence. If we are successful in this, we shall have a deep love for all that is constructive and creative. Our natural inclination will be to avoid all destructiveness. As esoteric students, we must never destroy for the sake of destroying, neither in deeds nor in thoughts, words, or feelings. Growth and development must be our joy. We should lend our hand to destruction only if we are able to bring new life out of what we destroy. This does not mean that we should stand idly by while wickedness prevails. On the contrary, in every evil, we must seek out the elements that allow us to transform it into good. We will then see more and more clearly that the best way to combat wickedness and imperfection is to create what is good and whole. We cannot create something out of nothing, but we can transform what is incomplete into something more perfect. The more we strengthen our creative tendencies, the sooner we will find ourselves capable of the right attitude toward whatever is bad and imperfect. Paragraph 13. Anyone who enters esoteric training must realize that its purpose is to build up, not tear down. Therefore, we should bring to it a desire to work sincerely and devotedly, not to criticize and destroy. We should become capable of reverence, because we are to learn things we do not yet know. We should look reverently toward what opens before us. Work and reverence are the fundamental attitudes expected of us as esoteric students. When we experience a lack of progress in our training, despite what we consider our unceasing effort, it is because we have not fully and properly understood the meaning of work and reverence. Work undertaken for the sake of results is the least likely to produce them, and learning unaccompanied by reverence is unlikely to advance us far. Love for the work, not for the results, alone moves us forward. And if we strive for healthy thinking and sound judgment, we will not blunt our reverence with doubt and distrust. Paragraph 14. Simply listening to what others say with reverence and devotion, rather than immediately opposing it with our own opinions, need not lead to our becoming slavishly dependent upon them. Those who have achieved something on the path to knowledge know that they owe everything to patient listening and assimilation, not to their own obstinate personal opinions. We must always remember that where we have already formed a conclusion, we cannot learn anything. If we desire only to judge, therefore, we can learn nothing. Esoteric training, however, depends on learning. As esoteric students, our willingness to learn should be unconditional. It is far better to withhold our judgment on something we do not understand than to condemn it. We can leave understanding until later. The more levels of cognition we attain, the more we need to be able to listen attentively, calmly, and reverently. For the work of cognizing the truth, indeed, all activity and life in the world of the spirit, is infinitely more subtle and delicate than what we do in the course of our ordinary life and thinking in the physical world. The further our horizon expands, the subtler the work we must perform. That is why there are so many differing, in quotes, views and, in quotes, perspectives concerning the higher realms. In reality, of course, there is only one view of higher truths. We can reach this view if, by work and reverence, we have risen to the stage of actually beholding the truth. Only if we are sufficiently prepared and form opinions on the basis of our favorite ideas and habitual thoughts, will our view differ from the only true one. Just as there cannot be different opinions regarding a mathematical theorem, so there cannot be different views about things in the higher worlds. But in order to arrive at such a, in quotes, view, we must prepare ourselves. If we bear this in mind, we will not be surprised by the conditions required by a spiritual teacher. Certainly, truth and the higher life dwell within the human soul, where each one of us can and must find them. But they lie deep within and can only be brought up from the depths after the obstacles have been cleared away. Only a person experienced in esoteric science can advise us on how this is to be done. Spiritual science offers this advice. But it does not force truths on anyone and does not proclaim any dogma. It shows a way. Each of us could find his or her way on their own, but perhaps only after reincarnating many times. Esoteric methods shorten the path. They allow us to reach the point where we can collaborate in the worlds where spiritual work advances the human evolution and salvation. Paragraph 15. This concludes all that may be said for the moment about the attainment of experiences of higher worlds. The next chapter will continue these observations by showing what happens in the supersensible members of our being, parenthesis, in the soul organism or astral body, and in the spirit or thought body, close parenthesis, during higher development. Thereby, what we have said so far will be seen in a new light and explored more thoroughly. The end of chapter 5.